In Play with Pragmatic, made possible by Horton in Britain, a worldwide supplier of engine cooling systems and proud member of the community for more than four decades. HortonWW.com. Welcome to another edition of In Play. I'm Pragmatic. Today's guest may be one of the most recognized voices in South Dakota. Over the past four decades, if you've been to the state high school football championships in the Dakota Dome, if you've been to the Howard Wood Dakota Relays, if you've been to the state high school track meet, if you've been to a Coyote football or basketball game or several other track meets and cross-country meets around the area, you've heard his voice. He is one of the most recognized public address announcers in the state. A darn good one, too. It's Greg Merrigan. And, Greg, welcome to In Play.
Well, thank you, Craig. It's an honor. Appreciate the ask.
You know, I've missed you over the past year or so as you recently retired as the public address announcer for the state high school football playoffs, the state track meet, the Howard Wood Dakota Relays. You got to be missing it, aren't you, Greg?
Yeah, it was a big decision. I'm nearing 70, and my eyesight isn't the best. And when I was that, like at a state track meet or Howard Wood or the playoffs, when you're that far away from the action and you just can't see it like you used to, I thought, you know what? I think we better knock this off before I really screw something up and start mispronouncing names and stuff like that. So, I quit the playoffs, 3-4 years ago. And then, 2022 was my last year at Howard Wood and the state meet. And I do miss it. The neat thing about working at the state meet in Howard Wood is just the number of people that are involved in those events that you become friends with over the years. So, that part of it is what I really miss. You know, guys like you and Jeff Lukens down on the award stand, that part I do miss.
Well, you're from Vermilion. You lived on a farm, near Vermilion. What was farm life like for you back in the 60s and 70s?
Well, there were seven boys in our family and it was a pretty idyllic situation. We, six of us were pretty close in age, and we had another brother that came a few years later. So we were kind of each other's best friends. We played on the farm together. And as we got older, we did all the fun things like pile hay and walk beans that farm kids love to do. So it was a nice, good lifestyle to grow up in. We only lived about a mile from town, so we could ride our bikes in. We weren't, way isolated, way out in the country, but a great place to grow up on a farm. And I think it helped kind of shape some of my values in my life, definitely.
Well, with all those boys and those brothers, had to be some great wrestling going on at times.
You'd think so, but everybody kind of knew the pecking order, so you didn't really pick on anybody that was older than you. So we actually got along pretty good.
Where were you in the pecking order?
I was number four.
Uh-huh. One of the middle guys.
Yeah.
Was it a big sports family? Was sports pretty important for all you guys at that time, for the whole family?
Yeah, my dad played for Vermilion High School football and then played at the university for a couple years and was always a big Coyote booster, so we kind of fed off that. My older brother, Steve, had the mile run record at Vermilion High School for many years. My brother, Tom, was a really good football player. Younger brother Nick was a really good football player. So definitely sports ran in the family, certainly.
Well, you ran track at Vermilion High School. Were there any other sports that you were at least involved with?
Played football kind of at the bequest of my dad. I really wanted to run cross country, but he just subtly said, you probably should play football. So I did play basketball for a couple of years, but track was kind of my first love in high school. Kind of emulated my brother Steve, who had the mile run record. I really looked up to him. He was a really good track athlete, and that definitely inspired me.
Yeah, so what events were you in? Was it long distance?
Pretty much 800 and in the mile. Back then, the 880 in the mile.
Sure.
In fact, I saw Kevin Cusick on Saturday night at the Vermillion High School Hall of Fame, and I reminded him that 50 years ago this spring, we were part of a relay squad that set our school record at the state meet. And we both kind of looked at each other like, wow, it's been that long. So medley relay, 880 and the mile run.
So why do you suppose track was one of your favorite things to do?
I was kind of tall and lanky. So I like to run. And like I said, I watched my brother run when I was younger, and that really inspired me. And always had good coaching here. They were good motivators. So I think just a number of things kind of pointed me in that direction.
Remember that tabletop hockey game? You know, you had like 5 metal rods, which you could move back and forth, and on the end was a hockey player, and you had a little small puck, and you had to try to get it into your opponent's net. You know, I was about 10 years old, and when my two brothers would play that hockey game, it was always the Minnesota North Stars and the St. Louis Blues. I would do the play-by-play while they were playing.
Oh, cool.
I bring that to you because when you're running track with Vermillion High and you weren't running, were you doing play-by-play of kids coming around the turn down the straightaway?
I kind of got that bug when I was a senior in high school. I got a chance to go to the Drake Relays, which I'd always heard about. Alan Ropps was our track coach, and he took a couple other teammates and myself down. And the announcer down there was Jim Duncan, who I learned in later years going was kind of a legend. And he did this play-by-play, lots of trivia, lots of interesting stuff. And I didn't really start announcing till probably 6 years later. And his style always kind of stuck in my head. So when I did get behind a mic and start calling a track meet, he was the guy I tried to emulate.
Nobody thought you were weird doing the play-by-play at a track meet when you were just there to watch it before you really got into being a public address announcer. You just had that knack to it, didn't you, Greg?
I've told some other people this. You go to a football game and it's about 3 hours, basketball games an hour and a half, 2 hours. Track meets can get a little long. You can be out there all day long. So if you can do something that kind of helps engage the fans with the athletes, I think it makes the whole event, just a little more enjoyable. It's not like you're sitting there in silence for hour after hour. So yeah. That's kind of what I've tried to do.
So you're a senior at Vermillion High School. We're talking about 1974. What were your plans? Did you want to go to college? Was there maybe work you wanted to do? What were you thinking back as a senior at Vermillion High?
Well, first and foremost, I was not a very good student in high school. I didn't apply myself very good, and I kind of went to college just because it was kind of what everybody did. And I wanted to be a mass comm major, kind of wanted to be in broadcasting, TV, radio somehow. And I also was involved in journalism in high school with our yearbook and our school paper. So when I was a freshman at the U, I was the assistant sports editor to Mike Mahon for the Volant.
Sure.
And I really enjoyed that. After 1 year, I got a construction job, and I kind of liked making a paycheck. So I kind of just diverted away from college and never went back. So I really didn't do anything in college that prepared me for any kind of a career that I ultimately had. But it was a good 1 year experience, and it kind of opened my eyes to some other stuff.
I remember Mike, a great guy, and just still doing some great work. So there was a point, though, that you thought, maybe I could be a sports writer?
Definitely. I really wanted to. After I was out of school for a while, I went to South Dakota State for a semester and majored in journalism and and really enjoyed it. And when I came home that summer from my spring up there, I got a construction job again, and again, the money was pretty good. And that at the time, probably not a good decision, but it was more appealing than going back to college. But yeah, I really did want to be a newspaper writer or sports writer. I really enjoyed journalism. Probably would have leaned more toward the print media than, you know, radio or TV or anything like that.
I'm glad that didn't work out, actually, Greg, with your future as a public address announcer. And you got started doing that, though, very early in college at USD. I think it's about 1975. What was that first experience with the microphone like as a public address announcer?
Well, Mike and I were covering a USD JV football game, and Ron Lentz was the sports information director at the time at USD, and he kind of looked around the press box. There was probably a half a dozen people there, and he said, "We need a public address announcer." And he looked at me and said, "Hey, you want to do it?" And I said, "Yeah, what the heck?" It wasn't like there was a big crowd there, and it was a JV game. I'd never done anything like that before. I had spotted a little bit for Monk Johnson, who was the longtime public address announcer. So I'd been up in the press box in high school a little bit, kind of helping him, and that was probably my first exposure to it. But that night, just spur of the moment, I did it and kind of enjoyed it. I didn't really have an opportunity to do much until the Dakota Dome opened, you know, 5-6 years later, and then I got a little more steady at it. But the experience that Ron gave me always kind of stuck with me, that it was something I enjoyed, and it's a, you know, there's a great camaraderie up in the press box, and that's kind of what kept my interest in it.
Well, that was, of course, at the old Inman Field there at USD, which now is what, the law school down there at USD, and Monk Johnson was doing the Coyote games, right? Was Monk kind of your mentor when it came to watching someone do the PA work?
Certainly. You know, for 1 or 2 years in high school, and I can't quite remember how the opportunity presented itself, but I spotted for him. I sat right next to him, and I've watched him and observed him, and he had kind of an old classic style, so I definitely took a lot of cues from him that helped me later on.
Any memorable mistakes in those early years as a PA guy?
Not necessarily mistakes. That very first JV game that I did, after I sat down and kind of looked over the roster with Ron, he said, "Now, Coach Salem is playing some redshirt kids tonight, and you're going to have to make up names for those kids." Because he said they're not supposed to be playing.
Oh.
So we put some notes by, you know, a dozen kids that were supposedly redshirting, but that were playing. And it kind of opened my eyes a little bit, like, you know, what is going on here?
That's awesome.
You know, you always... I think one of the first years I did the state football playoffs in the Dome, it was always a little confusing before the game. We'd introduce one team's offense and one team's defense, and it was always difficult to get that information up to the press box, because they would do a coin flip kind of over in the corner, and if you didn't see what was going on, and you guys, public TV was doing the game, and I was supposed to be introducing winner's offense, and I started introducing their defense, and nobody was running out on the field, and it was not a good moment.
Besides that, what was the hardest part of being a PA announcer for the football championships? They began, of course, in 1981. They're played in the Dome, and you're from Vermilion, you got the gig to be the PA announcer, but what was the hardest part about doing that work in the Dome?
You know, definitely prepping. I always tried to find, I was always meticulous about pronunciations. You know, these kids are on statewide TV, the big moment for them, and you got to do them justice by pronouncing their name right. So I would always go down into the stands and find a parent or a fan or somebody and run through the rosters with them. And after a while, with a lot of schools co-opting and stuff like that, I'd find a fan from Trip, and there might be kids there from Armor. And, well, they didn't actually know those kids real well. So then I had to go down and start talking to cheerleaders because the fans didn't always know the other kids' names on the co-op. But, you know, you definitely wanted to be prepared, and you wanted to be able to coordinate it with the broadcast, timeouts, awards at halftime, awards after the game. So definitely, you know, a lot of coordination to make sure that you weren't kind of flubbing up the whole thing. If TV was going to go to the field for an award, you wanted to make sure that, you know, you had that coordinated. So that was a challenge sometimes. Now they've got, you know, a producer or somebody who kind of tells you when to talk or coordinates who's walking out on the field. But in those early days, pronunciations and coordinating certain events related to the TV broadcast, that was definitely a challenge.
I can certainly hear you too, because you know, with me doing ball games, it's really important for me too that you get their name right. Because if you didn't get the name quite right, there's somebody coming to the booth to talk to you. They always would always
generally
be
a mom.
Yes, normally a mom, which is great because we want to get it right. Absolutely.
Yeah. One thing I started to do at the state track meet, I would send an email to all the coaches in the state and say, hey, if you've got a name that's a little unusual or difficult to pronounce, let me know. And coaches were really good about that, helping us out with that type of thing.
There's been times, too, though, where coaches don't necessarily know the last name either. I've gone through that a couple of times. They kind of know their kids by their first name sometimes, and that
yeah,
makes it kind of fun. You know, in the broadcast business, you know, we call them a spotter, you know, someone who will help the radio or the TV guy or the public address announcer. You know, they'll help by pointing on the roster on, you know, who made the tackle or interception or touchdown. Did you have one? And who were some of those people that helped you?
Yeah, definitely. In the early days of the football playoffs, USD provided the stat officials up top. So Larry Wittemeyer, who's a Tyndall native, who's a barber here in town, he was always helping out up there. Steve Mayer, who's on campus here, would do the stats computer, and he would holler out stuff. Or we would just have a designated spotter who would kind of stand behind us with a set of binoculars and holler out. Gary Prosser, who's a dentist here in Vermilion, he kept stats for high school football playoffs in Vermilion High School. And he would always, you know, be kind of one of the guys on the roll there that would holler out, you know, maybe how many yards or that type of thing. So always somebody up there to assist and make the job a lot easier.
You did the high school football championship games for 37 years. There has to be some memorable games that you did as the PA announcer in the Dome. Is there one that comes to your mind right away?
Yeah, probably Max Hawk's last game. Peter Martin was quarterback for Reb 2 Stevens, and it was just an epic game. A lot of scoring, back and forth, came down to the wire, and, you know, Yankton ended up winning it, which was pretty fitting for Max. But that's one that always kind of stands out for me.
You know, I'll never forget 1988. It was the 11B championship game. I think it was right before halftime. One of the officials in the game, it was Doug Koster, collapsed on the field and died. You know, I was doing the game on the radio at that time, and it had a startling effect in the second half. Greg, did you do that game?
I didn't actually do that game. I was doing the one after that. I can't remember who did that game, but I walked into the Dome as he was out on the turf. And the first guy I ran into was Bob Meyer, who was the superintendent at Vermilion High School then, and I said, "What's going on?" And he explained the situation to me, and there you never heard that dome so quiet.
Yep, I remember.
And then I went up and, you know, kind of started prepping for the game. I wasn't, you know, very directly involved in it, but I do remember that moment when I walked in and you know, it was pretty obvious what was unfolding in front of us.
Yep. You took over the PA duties for USD Coyote football and basketball from the legendary Monk Johnson. Did Monk have any words of encouragement for you when he retired and you took over?
Not really. You know, we were moving over to the dome and there was a lot of stuff changing, new personnel, coaches, things like that. And I think he just kind of seized the moment and thought, this is a good opportunity to step down. And I can't remember who the athletic director was at the time who asked me if I'd be interested. So Monk kind of ended and I kind of started kind of independent of each other.
You're a busy guy. You were busy. I mean, you're working as the public address announcer for high school football championships, Coyote football and basketball. You're handling a number of track events. Did your real job get in the way at all with all of those announcing jobs?
I tell you what, I worked for a Rural Water District and I worked for a board that was wonderful. I was able to kind of pursue this, you know, a lot of it's at night and on the weekend, so it didn't affect my work that much. But, sure. You know, if I needed a day off here or there or something came up, they were very supportive of me. And I, you know, I probably wouldn't have had those opportunities in some other job where I couldn't have got off as much. So I always had good cooperation from work.
Yeah. Yeah. That real job was working for Clay Rural Water System. You worked there for almost 40 years, but what did you do with Clay Rural Water System?
I was a manager. In the early 70s, rural water systems became popular in South Dakota, especially along the east part of the state. And I always explain it to people, it's like a municipal water system where you have a water plant and a water tower and water mains, but it's out in a rural area. It covers much, much larger geographical areas. I started there in 1982. And worked there, as you said, for 38 and a half years, almost 40 years. So I was his manager. We were not a big organization, but we had some of the best people I ever worked with in my life. And it was really an enjoyable career. I kind of stumbled into it. The gods kind of aligned for me when that job became available. And the first board of directors that hired me really kind of took a chance on me, and I was forever grateful. It was a great career.
Well, you still loved track at the time. It's 1995, and you begin announcing at the Howard Wood Dakota Relays in Sioux Falls and the state track meet that same year. You had to be almost in heaven at that time, doing two great events.
It was a dream come true. I had been doing meets at the Dome, track meets, and Dean Mann and Rich Hansen would come down and start a lot of those meets. So I kind of struck up a friendship with them. And about that time, Jim Burt had retired, and Dean said, "Hey, would you be interested in coming to Sioux Falls?" And I said, "Yes." So he put me in touch with Mark Miley, who was the meet director for those meets back then. And Mike Holt, you know, who's a popular figure around Sioux Falls, mm-hmm. used to be a TV guy himself. He was also contacted. And then Dan Gensler, who has had a number of sports information positions, kind of got asked too. So the three of us all started at the same time. 95 did Howard Wood, did the state meet, and all had similar interests. We were all kind of into trivia. So when we kind of hit the ground running that first year at Howard Wood in 95, things just went really well. We got along well and everybody kind of supported each other. So it was definitely a dream come true to be up there and then to be able to do the state meet too. Yeah, definitely a highlight at that time in my life.
Well, how much preparation did it take to get ready for like the Howard Wood Dakota Relays? I mean, you have some 3,000 athletes. At one point in time, you had college athletes that were involved as well. That's kind of fallen off the edge right now, but still thousands of athletes involved. How did you prepare for that?
Howard Wood is probably the toughest meet that I ever worked from just what you said. You've got high school kids from three or four different states. You've got colleges. Nowadays, you can find anything you want on the internet. There's all kinds of sites to go to get information. But that back then, it was more or less just trying to, you know, save newspapers, read preview stories in the local newspaper. You kind of had to struggle for information, so you kind of got it wherever you could. But tough meet, you know, you'd get a really good kid from Minnesota and you didn't know anything about him. And,
you know,
it was difficult to kind of highlight everybody in those early years.
How about the state track meet? How much preparation is involved there?
A little bit easier because you can find results from previous state meets and kind of have them at hand. And then you know who you're dealing with. They're all South Dakota kids. So it's a little easier. A lot of kids, a lot of data, three classes, boys and girls. So you got six different races in every event. But the research was a little easier because you were kind of dealing with a kind of a known quantity, looking at previous results, looking at newspaper stories from around the state. So that was a little bit of a breeze compared to what Howard Wood could be sometimes.
What about some of the most memorable performances that you saw, you were involved with as the public address announcer with the Howard Wood Dakota Relays? We saw a lot of out-of-state kids come to there with big performances over the years.
Yep. You know, one that sticks to my mind was on Friday night, the 3,200 meter run. Joe Klecker from Hopkins, Minnesota. At that time, he had the fastest 3,200 time in the country. And I've always kind of followed him since then. He's a pro runner now. But we had a little software program that we could enter a record time and then do splits. Every time he would come around, we'd say record pace is this. And it was pretty neat to see that unfold. And we had a couple of websites up that had some national rankings. So we kind of knew that he had a shot at doing something pretty special that night. That's probably one race that we kind of had an indirect hand in by keeping him on record pace.
Oh, sure.
And then finding out that it was the top time in the country that year. That was pretty, probably one of the more special moments. The special events always, and those were easy to prepare for. Bruce Conley, some of those guys that did the previews for those guys or for those special event participants, we would always get that script ahead of time. So you had some good information on them. And, you know, they always seem to find the best kids in about a three-state area, kids that might not normally have come to Howard Wood. That special event was pretty special because it gave you an opportunity to see some kids that you might not ordinarily see. So Joe Klecker's 3,200 and those special events are probably the things that stand out about Howard Wood.
How about the state track meet? You would see all three classes on the final day of the state meet. They kind of put them all together now in Sioux Falls. But state track meet, a couple of performances that you can remember?
Yeah, I actually looked up the year earlier today, and I think you featured Justin Horn of Trip Belmont. When he won, he scored 38 points and won the state Class B title all by himself. Uh-huh. That was pretty remarkable. I remember seeing him standing up there with his coach holding the trophy. And you were looking like, hey, where's the rest of the team? And well, that's it. You know, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's living in New Ulm, Minnesota now, raising a family up there. So it was fun talking to him recently about that that big event that he did all by himself.
You know, Macy Hines comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
state titles. She won everything from the 100 to the 3200, with the exception of the two hurdle races. And if you look back at the history of the state track meet, that is really unique to have somebody win 100 and also one year win the 3200. I know it was a real honor to kind of witness her every year. You just kind of wondered, okay, what's she going to do for an encore? She was a, you know, pretty special kid, and that always really sticks out. The first meet I worked, the last event was a 4x4, and in the girls race, Aberdeen Central had the baton and had probably a 20, 25 meter lead over Mitchell. Well, Mitchell had Jill Thieler, and everybody in the place knew what was going to happen. And I felt so sorry for that Aberdeen Central anchor. Because of course, Jill, you know, ran her down and won. And the next year it was identical. Aberdeen Central had a big lead. Here comes Jill. And both years, I just felt bad for that Aberdeen Central runner, because everybody in the place knew what was going to happen. So it was pretty neat seeing her in action. You know, she's still in the top 10 in a number of events.
You know, when it comes to participants or the spectators, I mean, we love our football. You know, we love our basketball. You know, volleyball is pretty cool too. But there's something about Howard Wood and state track. The people in the stands, they know their track. They're huge track fans, and it's amazing when there is something special going on. The fans in the stands, they respond.
You bet. You know, Bob Lowry told me once he thought the final day of the state track meet was the greatest single day in the high school sports calendar. And I agreed with him. You've got the individual races, you've got team races. You know, a lot of times the meet comes down to the 4x4, and it's pretty exciting. And if you've got a grandstands full of fans, that just adds to it. You know, both they kind of feed off the athletes, and the athletes kind of feed off them. So it is pretty special.
You know, it seems to always happen. You know, the public address guy, he's got to say something weird, like at a football or a track event. You know, you got to announce somebody's license plate number because they're parked illegally. Get ready to be towed. Weirdest announcement you've ever had to make?
Well, the biggest flub up I ever made was right before the AA football championship game. We had about 10 minutes to kill. It was a Saturday. And I decided to read some college football scores from that day. And I think Louisiana Lafayette was upsetting LSU. And I turned to the guy beside me and I made a holy, not a good word. Well, the mic was still on. And 8,000 people heard what I said, and I just thought, how am I going to cover this? So I just got right back into reading scores as if it never happened. I've had a lot of people come up to me over the years and said, were you the guy that said a profanity? And I bowed my head and said, yep, that was me. So that's probably my worst moment. Out in Rapid City at the state meet one year, parking out there can be a challenge. And a lot of people were parking along the railroad tracks that run right behind the stadium. And a policeman came up and said, there's a train coming through here in about 2 hours, and we're going to have some problems. So we pleaded with people to get back out there and move your car. A train's coming. And it really took us away from the announcing the meet. But, you know, potentially it could have been disaster. So they wanted us to keep harping on it, so we kept harping on it.
What's the hardest event as a public address announcer? Is it football? Is it basketball? Is it cross country, track? What do you think is the hardest one to do?
You know, cross country, a lot of times you're not doing a lot of play-by-play because you're in one stationary spot and the kids are way out on the course and you might not be able to see them. Football, everything's kind of right in front of you. Track is can be a challenge just because of the rapid fire nature. You know, say you're at the state meet and you got the finals of the 100. Well, you have 600s right in a row. And if you need a little trivia or you want to look something up or something's not quite clear to you before a race starts, you don't have a lot of time to recover or prepare because, you know, whether you like it or not, the next race is in the starting blocks and ready to go. So I would say a state track meet just because of the nature of the number of events and how quickly they're going off.
Greg, you've received a number of awards as a public address announcer. You know, a lot of us recognize your voice. We maybe didn't see your picture, but at least we heard your voice and knew who you were. But some of those awards like the USD Dan Lennon or the North Central Conference Noel Olson Award, Distinguished Service Award with the High School Activities Association, Howard Wood Relays, the Sioux City Relays, you're in the Hall of Fame with the Sioux City Relays. What do those all mean to you, Greg?
Oh, very, very gratifying. The biggest thing I take away from those awards is the people that I got to work with. You know, you work at Howard Wood in the state meet, and you get to know the people that run the meet, the Mileys, Jeff Lukens, the starters, Steve Scherer, and those guys. So to do those events with those people and then get recognized for it, that's, you know, means a lot to me to have shared a lot of time with those people and, you know, getting recognized for anything after being a part of those events. It's pretty gratifying. Means a lot.
Got a couple more for you, Greg. What would have happened in 1975 if Ron Lentz, the sports information director at the University of South Dakota, if he had not approached you or told you to do the public address announcing that day, what do you suppose would have happened?
I don't know. I've never really thought about that. I was around the dome when a lot of stuff was going on, and I'm not sure whether that opportunity, I doubt it would have presented itself. I really kind of owe it to Mike Mahon. He was the sports information director at the U, and he gave me some opportunities. He and I would go down to the Drake Relays every year. So if Ron wouldn't have given it to me, I think I would have still had the same opportunity from Mike. He just kind of knew my love of track, especially, and gave me some opportunities. So, it may have happened, but who knows?
It's not easy, being a public address announcer. You did multiple sports and, by the way, done very well. How would you describe the way you handled the job?
I hope I did justice to the kids that were out on the field or the track. That's my number one goal. If there's a kid running or a kid scores a touchdown, you know, you want to give them credit for their hard work. And I always strive to do that. So I guess I feel some satisfaction in trying to have done that, to give kids the kind of give them their due, so to speak.
In Play with Craig Maddock is made possible by Horton in Britain, where smiling at work happens all the time. Apply now at HortonWW.com. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It helps us gain new listeners. This has been In Play with me, Craig Maddock. This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.